Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Within football, we have silos.
We're going to talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and the week, they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Just here to tell you, Pack is back.
Guys, this is Jeff Giannis. You're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Poor Man's Packers Podcast, or one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd Boys.
Hello. Greetings, gentlemen.
And we are back after once again another month-long hiatus. Very, very much going on in the Packers world, but we have to start off with, you know, the one guy everyone probably wants us to talk about, you know, kind of a figure around the Packers franchise that has gotten brought up the last few years more than we'd like to have happen. A guy finally made a decision after holding a franchise hostage all offseason, even after the draft, and he was even under contract while this happened. I'm, of course, talking about Frank Ragnow retiring for the Lions. What an absolute fucking asshole holding his team hostage this late. I hope everyone views him in a terrible light now like I am, because he, you know, he couldn't make his decision. He had to wait until after the draft and was under contract. What a dickhead. Don't you guys agree?
That locker room is going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
First Ben Johnson, now Frank Ragnow.
Controversy in Detroit.
But yeah, whatever. Rodgers, we'll start there. We'll get into training camp and all the other stuff. Jair's obviously gone. He was released, or I think he was technically released today, or it was announced yesterday that he was going to be gone. But the other thing, talk about Rodgers to the Steelers. First practice today with the Steelers today, too. A little press conference, too. How do you guys feel about Rodgers going to the Steelers, Todd?
I don't have anything against Rodgers at this point. I mean, I'm impressed that they got it done for that price. That seems super cheap as well, even for an aged Aaron Rodgers. But I don't know. I'm kind of rooting for him. I enjoy that he's stirring the pot over there, right? Like, that's, I like that.
I like that he's in the AFC.
A little bit of joy. Yeah, he's over.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in the AFC before, but like nothing really happened at the Jets. But I'm like, I feel it already that with the Steelers, he's going to stir the pot a little bit. And like, it's just going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to be on that side of it, to just watch it happen, you know?
Well, even when he was with the Jets and some of the comments he made, and oh, he went on a trip to Egypt or whatever and didn't show up to training camp or whatever the deal was. It was like, I'm just glad that, like you said, it's the opposite conference. It's not my team that needs to worry about it. I don't really care. I can watch from afar. Same thing here. I will say this, I'm just glad that he didn't go to the Vikings, because I think if he went to the Vikings, we're looking at a Brett Favre in 2009 type season where he has a renaissance year after a couple of down years. Like, just the weapons that he would have had on that offense, that would have been scary to play twice a year.
It would have upgraded the stakes for this entire season for the Packers and obviously the Vikings if that happened. And I mean, again, not a very expensive deal. What is it, like 20 million tops that he'll get? I don't know what there was for incentives and all that, but it was, for me, like, the Jets was one thing, seeing him in a different jersey. It really wasn't that jarring to me, but seeing him in like the weird Steelers, like yellow sleeves and the helmet, like that was more weird than anything he wore for the Jets. That was odd for me to see today.
I think it's more fun that he went to the Steelers too, because like Mike Tomlin and him is way more fun than Aaron Rodgers just steamrolling whoever is in charge of the Jets. Like, it's more interesting that because Tomlin's there.
Well, I'm interested to see how he gets along with Arthur Smith, because I don't know that any fan base has ever liked Arthur Smith.
He's always been a run first offense too, with like Bijan Robinson, and they've always used like two running backs. I'm curious to see how that's going to go. It's funny too, how they're like looking for, they traded away Pickens, and now they're like looking for more help too. It just, it's like DK Metcalf, Pat Freiermuth, that Tyler Warren who can catch a couple passes, and I don't know
Calvin,
what else they have.
Calvin
really
Austin had a decent year, but
yeah.
Was
Alan Lazard is available.
Was Arthur in Miami prior to Atlanta? Is he the one I'm thinking of? Who was the coach in Miami that was like, wasn't he Tua's OC right at the beginning of his career, and like everyone hates him?
No, he was somewhere else. I don't remember. It might have been the Bills. I could be wrong, but I don't know if we want to get hung up on that.
Tennessee, he was the Titans.
There you go. That's right. I think he's the guy who came in after Matt LaFleur, actually.
Oh, okay.
If not, he was the one after the guy who came in after the guy for Matt LaFleur. But yeah, this episode we'll talk about Jair. We're going to talk about Kenny Clark and just the other things going on with the Packers, the wide receiver room, Bo Melton taking snaps at DB today. Some guys being injured, other guys not being injured. You know, we'll just, it's nice to get some things to talk about now after the draft. There's quite the lull in the offseason. Now it's like, hey, guys are actually, I mean, they're in shorts, but they're running around in Packers jerseys, so we have some things to talk about. But first, Jair Alexander has finally been released from the Packers. Kind of, it's been weird how the last few years, I mean, there's always something going on in the offseason since like 2020. It's been Rodgers' watch. The least drama we had was the first year with Jordan Love, where it's just, oh, is he any good? And then the next offseason was, okay, when is he going to sign his contract? And then this offseason, it's been, what's going on with Jair Alexander? So it's nice to finally get an answer to that. But there was the report about a week or two ago from Matt Schneidman saying that there was some type of offer, or there were talks of an offer, and that there was more than a 1% chance, which we had kind of kept hearing all offseason. There was like a 1% chance of Jair going back. But I think we can start things off here, because this has been a great little look into the NFL media and what you should pay attention to and what you should not pay attention to. So I'm going to play a clip here from the national guy, Pete Schrager, who about a month ago, of course, you know, again, national guy, doesn't know as much about Green Bay, but, you know, he has to jump in and have some type of scoop that's different from other people. So this is what he said a month ago when things were starting to look a little bit more optimistically with Jair. This is on the Pat McAfee show.
I talked to Matt LaFleur over draft week.
Yeah, I had a lovely dinner with Matt LaFleur during draft week in Green Bay, and I brought it up, and I don't think he'd mind me saying this, saying like, we're actually in a good place with Jair. You know, obviously there was some stuff last year and the coin toss situation a couple of years back, and all that stuff is all head scratching stuff that it would drive a coach nuts when you're trying to run a disciplined program. But from what I gather, this thing is in a lot better place than what was being presented in the media, and that there is a place for Jair Alexander in Green Bay. And I think he and Jeff Hafley actually have had a great relationship, and it's a different breed and it's a different time. And I don't know exactly how it nets itself out, but like when he was being listed as that number one trade target, I don't think that was coming from Green Bay. And if you know Goody at all, he wasn't leaking that to anybody. So that was a lot of outside noise, I believe.
So Pete Schrager, national media guy, you know, oh, it's not as bad as they're saying in Green Bay, pretty much. You know, again, all we heard was like 1% chance he's coming back. He's as good as gone for the Packers. And then a couple of weeks later, Matt Schneidman comes out saying, you know, that there's a offer on the table, allegedly. I believe he got that out of Jair's camp, and I think they might have just been lying to kind of pump up the market, like, hey, the Packers are still interested in him. Hey, maybe other teams should be interested in him too. Well, then the Packers announced yesterday that they're going to release him. Today, Goody talked to a couple reporters at practice. This is him talking to Jason Wilde, asking the question, but I think this paints a more clear picture as to what was going on since the end of the season.
You feel like the offer, I don't want specifics, but you feel like the offer that you made gave him, it was a fair offer that gave him a chance to earn back whatever he
did? Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the contract stuff or whether we did or didn't offer anything. It was just something that I think there were conversations. And again, I think that wasn't something they wanted to do. And at the end of the day, we kind of had to really kind of look and see if that was really what we wanted to do as well.
So Goody there basically says, you know, there were conversations. I mean, Goody will absolutely lie. I don't know how much he would gain out of this anyways, but he says there were conversations, but he also says that he doesn't think that's what they'd want to do. So it sounds a lot more like Jair was refusing to restructure his contract. Tough to trade him if he's not going to restructure his contract with the $17 million contract. It also, Jordan Schultz, I think a couple weeks ago or today, he might have reported that the Bills had been interested before the draft in him. But again, no team is going to trade for a guy with that type of cap baggage attached to him. So a little bit more clear, it looks like Jair did not want to change his contract. That is the reason why the Packers cut him. They waited this late. I don't know, maybe to spite him a little bit with the injuries and stuff and maybe not wanting to work with them. So they kind of set him up to maybe not get a as lucrative deal if they had cut him earlier in the offseason. But Jair is gone. Todd, what are your I don't know, first thoughts on moving on?
Starting with a question, did we stand to gain much by cutting him before year start? Like, did we not know that we were going to cut him before then? Because like, if we knew, I don't believe that they would spite him if there was money to be gained, right?
Is this a post-June 1st designation?
So if they had cut him before June 1st, all the cap hit would have happened this year. That like $19 million, whatever it was, dead cap, 17, I forget exactly what it was, would have happened this year. But they cut him after June 1st, and apparently they had to have some type of agreement with Jair for him to do that, which is interesting that he agreed to.
What do you mean, an agreement to cut him after? They can cut him whatever they want.
But it's something with the contract. They had to move shit around so that they could have that cap hit happen this year, even though they actually cut him post June 1st.
So to cut him, to restructure that debt out, essentially.
Yes.
That's the part that he has to agree to.
Yes. And that's what Ken Ingles was saying as well. Twitter salary cap Packer guy. I think the Packers just held out because maybe it would give them more time where the market's drying up. Teams are, you know, filling those holes. His agent's probably talking to other teams, seeing if there's any interest, and maybe, you know, they'd be more likely to come back and want to be at the bargaining table if the market isn't what they thought it would be. So maybe they were holding out that long. But at the same time, it sure sounds like the Packers were operating under the assumption that Jair would not be back this year.
So what I don't get to, and maybe I'm just missing something, but like, what? Why not hold on to him through training camp? And then if there's big training camp injuries, maybe somebody gives you a late round for him. Or is it just not even feasible because of the cap number?
That was the big thing that Jason Wilde kept pointing out with Matt Schneidman's report from 2 weeks ago, because Schneidman's report was that there was some type of offer on the table for Jair for some type of restructure. The other big part about it that a lot of people were ignoring is that Jair apparently was planning to attend minicamp, whether there was a restructured deal or not. And the Green Bay Packers wouldn't want him to report to training camp, one, because it would be kind of an awkward situation. But two, if he shows up and drops a weight on his big toe or something and he goes on the IR, he's owed his entire contract. So this was kind of the natural ending point for when something had to happen, as Andrew Brandt, that loser on Twitter, always says, you know, deadline spur actions.
Wow.
He tells the same fucking stories every year.
Wow, Packer guy, you just don't like him. Wow.
He is so, he was, at the beginning of Twitter, he was cool because it's like, wow, some type of insight in the Packers. Then it's like, holy shit, it's the same story over and over and over again.
That does make sense. The liability of him getting injured at camp, and you can't stop him from reporting to camp. And
right.
All he has to do is say he hurt something.
Right. Oopsie.
Oh, pull my hammy.
The one thing I don't understand is, if we were operating under the assumption that he was not going to come back all along, why didn't we do more to address corner in the draft? Like, were we just trying to play chicken here and make it seem like to other teams like, oh, we're really confident he's coming back, we're not going to draft a corner, so give us an offer we can't refuse, kind of a thing? And they called our bluff.
We have Bo Melton, so
yeah, we'll get an ace in the hole too. And I've heard a lot of people have said that on like Twitter. The fucking some of the doom Packer fans on Twitter are just ridiculous right now after moving on from Jair. But at the end of the day, the last 2 years Jair played like what, 50% or less of the snaps, and just last year we were a top 10 defense with him playing less than 50% of the snaps, and we added Nate Hobbs. You know, I think Carrington Valentine there's probably, we have some more confidence in him now too. Obviously, it's pretty thin up top. We probably should have done more. There were talks that we had interest in that one corner that we potentially would have taken in the first round, but Matthew Golden fell there, you know, because I think there was talks to, I don't have the recording, but I know Matt was specifically asked about not addressing corner, and he's got a terrible poker face, and he just kind of said that it's just not the way that the board fell. And the Packers have a very specific, you know, height, weight, speed that they look for at corner. And I think that that guy, again, I forgot his name, but after he was gone, there just wasn't a lot that were a Packer type of player that we would have used in the second to, you know, fifth round, whatever.
So that's my concern, is the depth. Like, I feel a hell of a lot better with Carrington Valentine as the dime back than the nickel playing. I mean, because Nixon's playing on the outside, right? Hobbs is playing on the outside. So that means Carrington Valentine is playing the nickel for us? He's playing in the slot?
It could be Carrington outside, Hobbs at slot, and then Keyshawn at the other.
I think part of it too is just the confidence that the front office has in Jeff Hafley being able to work around the players that he has. You know, even just last year or at the end of the season, they said that we played a lot more three linebacker sets than we were anticipating, and there was a lot of things that he had to differently. You know, like the what were we calling it with the blitz? The not real blitz where we'd still send four guys, but it would be.
Simulated blitz,
like that kind of thing. I think
simulated pressure.
I think there's confidence that there's talent in the secondary, just not at corner, and Halfley's going to be able to figure it out. You know, as long as we have two outside corners, I think Valentine's for sure an outside guy. Figure out what you're going to do with Hobbs and Nixon, who have both either played outside, or when they announced Hobbs signing, they said that he was going to play outside, or it was reported. So I think it's just have two guys outside. You got a couple guys who can play in the nickel with Bullard. And I mean, you know, the last couple of guys who came in at the end of the year too did just fine filling in. I think there's confidence that Halfley will be able to make it work as long as, you know, we have a couple guys who can play outside.
I was going to say, now that I think about that, I seem to remember Bullard played an awful lot in the slot last year.
Yeah,
especially Evan Williams came on. So maybe.
Yeah.
So.
He's so, a bit of a liability, though.
Yeah. Young player. I mean, what was he, a second round pick? So I don't know. Maybe they feel better about the pieces than I do. And I'm just an idiot fan on the outside looking in.
Probably. That's probably true. We talked about, well, the other thing again, that frees up $17 million in cap space. We were set to be $39 million over the cap next year, but with Jair's release, it obviously frees up the 19, so we should only be about $10 million over now. And this probably is going to lead, you know, everyone's like, oh, are we going to trade for Trey Hendrickson now? It's probably just leading into re-signing all our guys from that 2022 draft class or whatever, where Zach Tom's going to get a big deal. I don't think we're going to re-sign Dobbs. Maybe Christian Watson comes back. You know, there's a few guys that we need to re-sign, and not just that draft class, but the one after that too. So I think a lot of it is going to be just keeping guys around that we already have. Just
keeping the band together. That's all we're doing.
Mm-hmm. So we can keep making the playoffs and.
Yeah. Making, you know, those sweet tunes.
Mm-hmm.
So we took all of Jair's cap hit on this year's cap. So what we have a fair amount of space available still, right?
Yeah. I think we had like around $40 million available. So I think there's still about $20 million left. Again, my assumption is that we're going to sign Zach Tom before the start of the season. We'll probably work out something with Quay Walker as well, and then it'll be okay, who else do we have to sign Elton next year? I don't think Elton has 2 years left on his deal. We'll get to him later, but this very well could be his last year with the Packers as well, when, you know, we got Jordan Morgan, Belton, and then Monk, who's been having some snaps with, it's just fucking mini camp, but he's had some snaps with the starters as well.
Who would have thought that would be a conversation piece at this point? Like, Elton not being with the team, like 2 years ago, it was like, dude, this guy is, and he is amazing. He can play anywhere. I don't know. It's just wild to me.
Sticking with the corners here too, the thing we'll talk about from today, and I think this is going to be a thing we'll look back a couple of years from now, if you even remember it, be like, hey, remember that little blip on the radar? Bo Melton took snaps at DB today for the Packers during minicamp. His brother, he plays for the Cardinals. He was, I believe, a second round pick for them at corner. It's, you know, it's fun. I think Bo Melton is a fine player. I think he's a solid number five wide receiver on your team. He's very fast. And, you know, when he's on the field, he's not embarrassing for the most part, but he cannot block for you. But I don't think anything is going to come from it. It's very funny that it happens, of course, the day after we cut Jair Alexander, because it's like, oh my God, they're scrambling for bodies at the position now. Because I was even looking, if Corey Ballantyne was still out there, I would want to sign him. Robert Rochelle is still a free agent. He was signed by, I think, the Colts or another team, and that was cut a month later. He's a guy I would bring back because I feel like you could do a lot worse in the corner room than that. But it's fun to see Bo Melton, you know, just a guy switching positions and someone who's had somewhat of a role on this team. Do you guys think this is going to turn into anything?
You know what this means to me? Bo Melton's getting cut very soon.
That's what that means.
This is exactly what happens when you take a DN. You're like, well, you can't play DN, but well, you can kind of catch. Put him at tight end, see what happens. Then he sticks around the practice squad and then they cut him. Like, that's literally what always happens.
No way. I mean, Bo Melton's just been playing out of position his entire football life. I mean, going back to college at Rutgers, look, you said it, Spencer. His brother was just drafted in the second round. Bo was undrafted as a wide receiver. So if he had been playing corner this entire time, I mean, could have been a first round pick for all we know.
He did play a little bit of corner at Rutgers, I believe. I think someone reported that.
Known football powerhouse Rutgers, just saying.
Yeah. And like you had mentioned, Todd, you know, that was my first thought too. It's like, oh, this is fun right now, but it's also like, oh, he's probably going to get cut. So I did some research today because I'm a loser. I wonder if any of you guys will remember this. One of these I didn't actually remember. I just got it from the Google search, which is terrible. So it took me a while to find it. Here are some players who we've had in recent memory who have changed positions. These guys, not so much for the better. Alex Magoo, you might remember. He was the quarterback
converted to wide receiver
for us last year during training camp and on the practice squad. He was a quarterback for, he was throwing balls to Jay Sternberger, I know, in the AFL, XFL, whatever the hell they have going on. In 2022, Rico Gafford was a wide receiver. We converted him to DB. He, of course, was cut at the end of training camp. But I think they announced him right after the season was over that he was converting to DB. One guy, this is the one that I wish he could have at least made it to like a preseason.
I know who you're going to say.
I'd be surprised if you do. James Looney?
Oh, no.
So he was a defensive lineman, I think out of Wisconsin. He was a defensive lineman.
Did he go to fullback?
They converted him to tight end. And I just wanted to see this big fucker play tight end in a preseason game, but unfortunately he got cut before we got to that point. Herb Waters was a wideout. We converted him to a corner in 2017. Those are the four guys from most recent memory that I could remember
and
looked up.
Dominic Daphne?
Dominic Daphne was a tight end the whole time, pretty much. Didn't they change his position? Once you're a tight end H-back type, it's not as much of a transition to me because you're always doing that type of shit anyways. You know, because he was a fullback, he was a tight end. You're just kind of that, you know, like Spencer Havener back in the day. Like, you're just kind of that filler role on offense. So I think that's, you could argue.
I thought
that
he was like a DN that they moved over to tight end. He was always a tight end.
I don't believe he ever played defense, but I could be wrong.
What about Taysom Hill? Did we only play him at quarterback that preseason we had him?
Yeah, that's a good point. We only played him at quarterback because it was Mike McCarthy and he didn't know how to do anything creative on offense at that point. The other two conversions to talk about, one, Sam Shields. I don't think he really counts because he was always a corner for us, but he did play wideout in Miami. He never played wideout for us. But the big one is obviously Ty Montgomery going from wideout to running back to kick returner to cut and on the streets after running that one out against the Rams.
Yep. Undefeated Rams out in the Coliseum.
There's only one. There's only one success story, and it's Sam Shields.
Ty Montgomery had like a 10-year career. I think he's a success story as well.
Insane that he had a 10-year career.
I mean, he was actually pretty fun out of the backfield. Like he was pretty versatile. It was fun watching him out of the backfield.
He was a solid player, and he was with the Patriots for like 3 or 4 years after he was with us too. So
remember when the Bears converted Devin Hester to wide receiver?
Yeah, that was definitely a thing that they did. God, did he ever actually have that great of a year? You're saying Bears?
I don't think so.
Ty Montgomery
started as a corner,
right?
And then they moved him to wide receiver. I think Sam Shields, when he came out, like, and maybe it was just Green Bay, but I thought that most teams viewed him as a corner and not a wide receiver, just based on his build.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I was saying too. He's always kind of been a DB. Ty Montgomery, he did have that one good year for us, I think, when Lacy went down with a couple injuries, because I know he had one big game against the Bears. Might have been that one where Jordy had the field goal range deep bomb at Soldier Field, but I could be way off on this too. Next thing to talk about, what do we have? Oh, Kenny Clark, off-season surgery. He played last season with a partially broken toe, I believe, and bunions in his foot. He didn't have any pins in, but he was one of the players who was bitching about the field at Brazil, and now we know why. It's because it fucked up his foot and his toe. Here is a clip of Kenny talking about his toe, I think, last week with reporters.
Every step, you know what I'm saying? You're taking every step, and yeah, your toe is busting, you know what I'm saying? So,
as Kenny said, every step his toe is bussing. So that's how you know it wasn't going that well for him last year. I'm old now, being 33, where it's like I know some words, some of them I'm like, know what they mean.
Does that mean busting? Like it's like it busting or bussing? Like that's like a different term.
I looked it up last week and I do not remember what Urban Dictionary gave me, but I know, but I was like, yeah, oh, it's more of a negative thing than I had thought it was. But yeah,
isn't that a podcast, Bussin' with the Boys? Is that something completely different?
I think that's more literal with bussin', because they usually
they're literally on a bus. Okay. A bus. So
it said what you would say if something is really good, bussin'.
I don't know.
Want the sentence that it's portrayed in?
Yes.
Tay says, I didn't know your mama could cook this good. JJ says, yeah, her food be bussin'.
Well, maybe he was saying his toe is bussin'. That could be what the reference was.
I think he means busting. Like it's busted. Like it's a
maybe,
like it's
but broken. I didn't hear a hard T in there. So either way, does this make you feel a little bit better about the defensive line room after last year Kenny was a zombie for the most part?
No, I would also have excuses if my unit was that bad. Someone's got to come up with an excuse. Until I see something better, I don't feel better about this. And I think we're going to talk, are we going to talk about LVN next?
Yeah.
Okay,
his is a worse excuse.
Yeah, they're horrible excuses. Yeah.
I at least will give Kenny Clark the benefit of the doubt because he's an established veteran that we're paying a lot of money to. But whether or not he had a legitimate injury does not excuse the year that LVN and Rashawn Gary had.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I feel a little bit better. I think everyone on the actual defensive line on the inside there with Wyatt, him, Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, like there was all these different, like I feel a little bit better now that one of the main pieces should be healthy all year. And I mean, that's obviously a 5-second clip from the interview, but you know, you could tell he was like embarrassed with the tape that he put out last year. So he's still like what, 29, 30 years old. So maybe he's got one more good year left, and it's probably the last year he'll be with the Packers. But I don't know. I'm a little bit more optimistic, and it was funny. God, I don't remember. I should have saved the clip. I think they asked Kenny about the defensive line coach from last year who got fired. And he was like, I'm not going to answer that question. So you could tell he was like not very impressed with last year's defensive line coach. So hopefully we'll see with Covington this year, the new guy, some improvement on the D-line. Obviously, the front office is assuming that there will be some type of jump with him leading that room. But yeah, LVN, other guy to talk about. I don't know how much we need to talk about it. broke his thumb last year going into the season. He had like a soft cast. He said it did affect him a bit. You know, they'll say, you know, it affected him, but no excuses, blah, blah, blah. And then Rashawn Gary was trying to back him up, saying like, oh, yeah, if you can't put your hand. So that's the reason why, if you remember last year, LVN was always on the one side of the line, is so he could put his non-broken hand down in the dirt. So that's why we kept seeing that last year, and they weren't really moving them around all that much either. But either way, it's like, if Rashawn Gary is giving you, backing you up on excuses, and it's your thumb that you're talking about, it's like, okay, LVN, it's still, I'm not completely out on him, but it's obviously, you got to show us something this year. You're obviously a bum.
LVN hasn't had any counter moves, any pass rush moves with two healthy hands. So what difference does a broken thumb make? And didn't he then rush against the right tackle all year long too, which is supposed to be the worst pass protecting tackle of any team?
I think that's an age take at this point. I think over the last 5 or 10 years, it's pretty much left and right tackle are viewed a lot more similarly, but you're not right. It used to always be like your road grader was your right tackle and your pass blocker was your left tackle, but that's kind of shifted of late. I mean, look at, you know, Zach Tom, not like he's elite, but he's a pretty solid right tackle, one of the better tackles in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, I get it. It does matter. If you had a broken thumb or whatever, like, it matters, right? But it's not like he went from 12 sacks to 6. He went from, what, like 1 sack?
4 sacks to 3 kind of a thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I don't, like... And I'm not out on him. I think he has physical tools. I think it's great. And that's a guy who could benefit from coaching. So I have like more hope for LVN. Where it's like Kenny doesn't need, does Kenny need to be coached this year? Like, I don't, like, that's what I'm missing. Like, too, it's like, okay, you didn't like the coach, but like, did you forget everything that you knew last year? I don't know. Is it scheme? It's not scheme, right? Like,
well, there was some stuff. I think the defense is going to be worse this year, because I forgot what the quote was, but it was interesting. And it was either from Rashawn Gary or Kenny Clark saying how much they like they were gap focused last year and containing your gap and not letting anything outside. Like, we saw that so much last year where Gary and LVN were containing, which is something we weren't used to with Gary. And it seems like the focus was the run game. And maybe this year they're going to open it up a little bit more. Again, that's just basing a lot of shit off of one quote, but it's kind of how it looked like last year too.
Well, don't you allow the three tech in a, like the three tech in a 4-3 to do whatever they want? Isn't that what Kenny's role was?
I'm more so thinking the edge guys, and obviously, yeah, Kenny being on the inside. Yeah, obviously there's,
it doesn't even make any sense though, because in a 4-3, your edge guys go. Like, right. That's the, so I don't, it seems like excuses to me. Sorry. I want to be more positive, but it's just like one of those things where it's like, until I see something different, like, I'm just hopeful that, who are like our fifth and sixth string, edge guys,
Brenton Cox,
am I blanking on there? Brenton Cox. And, who's the other dude?
Aaron
when
Mosby?
Those two were out there. Yes. When Brenton, I want Brenton Cox and Aaron Mosby out there. Those, they're our best shot. Literally.
Yeah, we'll see. And then that
what
fifth
we saw
round
last year.
Too. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, that's true.
I would think, again, I think the rushing D is going to be worse this year and the pass rush is going to be better. I feel pretty confident that that'll happen this season. Moving on to the offense, you know, the fun stuff to talk about. I think we mentioned it a couple episodes ago, but Josh Jacobs, he talked to the media for the first time since being on Media Row for a Super Bowl week. When just about any mic that he got put in front of, he was saying that they need to get a number one receiver. He kind of walked back the comments a little bit and said that he was lighting a fire under the receivers this offseason. Nothing personal. Jaden Reed did come out and say that he didn't take it personally, blah, 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 and that they do need to be better and how he's been working on catching balls all offseason because he dropped too many last year. But either way, still kind of an odd offseason for the receiver group. Obviously, Jaden Reed, along with that, there was that report that he had his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, talk to the Packers about his role. Jaden Reed said that got overblown. Romeo Dubs, you know, he's kind of an oddball anyways, but as Justice Mosqueda put out there on his podcast that the reason why the DK Metcalf Packers rumor surfaced is because it came out of Romeo Doubs' camp, because he would have been included in that trade. So his name might be floating out there. Maybe that'll happen sometime this season too. Who knows? Dontavian Wicks is still Dontavian Wicks. He dropped a bad ball in minicamp. Who else is there? Matthew Golden has looked really good. Interesting to hear Jordan Love. This was the quote he had at his softball game a couple weeks ago. Quote, "Just the start we've had, he looks like a stud. Looks like a very polished receiver. Can't remember him, and I can't remember him saying that about any receiver in the past." He's never used polished to describe anyone that he's thrown the ball to, aside from maybe Davante Adams. So I thought that was a little interesting to hear. Outside of that, I mean, it's been an odd offseason. I didn't think we were going to go so early with receiver in the draft, but how do we feel about the receiver room now, very, very early on here?
It does feel like, I mean, I don't know what you do with Cordarrelle 2.0. That dude, he dropped a handful of balls. That's what I've seen.
You see him double catching like that one Twitter clip?
Yeah. And it's just like, so like, to me, I don't know where he fits yet. That's obviously for LaFleur to figure out. It's kind of a gadgety guy, right? Could totally see him doing like returns, see him doing that jet motion and stuff like that. But like, that's not a big role in the offense. So to me, he's not really a big factor at this point until we see it. Like wide receiver screens, you know, that type of thing. Everybody says it, but like the Debo role, but like to a lesser extent. So it doesn't really factor in a whole lot. But I feel like Matthew Golden is like kind of the replacement for Doubs. So I wouldn't feel bad about Doubs moving on, where like he's that deep. Because what Matthew Golden like led or was like pretty close to leading the entire CFB in like 20 plus yard catches. So he's like that mid. Yeah. I say mid. That's pretty deep down the field. But like that mid range, not necessarily like a home run guy, which is like the role that Doubs, like that was what he was best at. Was like the deep in breaking routes and just like getting open in the middle of the field where LaFleur would just kind of like scheme that open. And that feels like a good replacement. So I feel good in general because Matthew Golden looks like he can catch. And that is what this team is missing. And like, if he can light a fire, just like the competition can light a fire under some of these guys to catch the frickin' ball, that's all we need. Just catch it. The guys get, it seems like they're getting to their spot to some extent. You know, Jayden Reed's where he's supposed to be. Christian Watson, granted, we won't see him for a while, but like just run straight and catch the ball. Like, that, I don't like.
That was the other thing, too. It sounds like Christian Watson, and I mean, it's nothing right now, but that he's ahead of schedule, that he looks like a healthy guy out there. He's not practicing, but when they're moving around stretching and shit, like he's throwing the big old medicine ball. Like it doesn't seem like he's favoring his leg all that much. So it would be pretty nice if he's just out those first 3 weeks on the PUP, and then maybe they can get him in the, you know, back, you know, a little over a month into the season. So we'll see.
It would be amazing to get him back in the field, because that wide receiver room, especially with him coming back, looks so much more athletic than it has looked just the last couple of years, which I think is a huge plus if they can catch the damn ball. So
I just like the amount of competition that's in that room right now. And like you said, if Golden comes in and he blows everybody away, and it lights a fire under everybody else's ass and it causes them to step up, well then, you know, rising tide lifts all ships, right? Versus if Golden comes in and, you know, the pads come on in training camp and isn't quite up to snuff, like he's a rookie. We shouldn't be expecting him to come in and have 1,200 yards receiving and 12 touchdowns. But again, if his presence, the fact that we invested a high draft pick in him, causes these other guys to step up, I'm interested to see how the snap distribution changes from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. If Golden comes on like he did in his lone season at Texas, if, you know, some of these guys maybe play a little better in training camp and then start to fall off over the course of the year, or maybe Golden is just the guy, one of the guys from day one, and he slips in, you know, seamlessly and has 70 catches in his rookie year.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. Like, I feel like it's a coin flip that Romeo Doubs is on this roster at the end of the season, just because if we don't possibly we trade him during training camp, there's all this shit, I mean, not all this shit, but like perhaps the Steelers would want to trade for him, which would be kind of funny if he was reunited with Aaron Rodgers after Romeo Dubs said that he learned a lot from him, even though he barely talked to him. But it's like, if Golden gets it together pretty quick, if Dontayvion Wicks takes that step, he's a little consistent. Jaden Reed, I think he's the most consistent guy probably on the offense. Well, even though he fell off at the end of last year and he's terrible in man coverage. And then if Watson comes back healthy, you know, if we have enough healthy bodies, maybe around the trade deadline when Christian Watson's coming back, perhaps they, it's kind of a weird spot too, because it's like you could trade him for something, but at the same time, he's a wide receiver. And if he plays halfway decent this year, he's probably going to get a good contract anyways. So I don't know if whatever you get out of a trade is better than, like, you know, a fourth or fifth round comp pick that you'd get a year from now. So I don't know. Maybe they just want to streamline it to get the pick sooner. But either way, it'll be interesting. I feel like the last 3 years, I keep waiting for the wide receiver room to just explode. And maybe this year, going in with lesser expectations or just hampered a bit because we've been hurt in the past, maybe this is when it blows up and all of a sudden we're the 2011 Green Bay Packers.
Well, to me, it's like if Wicks and Reed just have a year closer in line with their rookie year, I feel a lot better about this group. But just the way that last year ended for basically everybody that's a holdover, there's just a lot of question marks and a lot of sour taste.
Which is, again, why I'm always bitching about the coaching staff.
There's no doubt there's tons of potential in that room, but just like, again, it's like with the defensive line, it's like until we see it, it's really tough. Like the drops have to stop. Like Dontayvion Wicks has maybe like the highest ceiling in the room. That's probably not true, but his ceiling is so, when he's good, he's so good. And then you just watch him the next game. And it's like, where'd he go? Like what's happening? And so that's what's super frustrating. If these guys just sucked and we just moved on and got different guys in the room, it maybe would be like almost easier, but they don't suck. They're just super inconsistent. And like, that's what we need from them is consistency. Like they've all shown flashes. We just need to see it on a day-to-day basis. And again, we've said this before, but like, that's, to me, that's like the lack of like leadership in that room. It's like, there's no, and it's not coming from the coach, and maybe it can't come from the coach, but it's like, the discussions that if you go way back, like when Devontae talks about how Jordy kind of like disciplined him into like watching film and like being like, no, you can't, like, if you want to be good, you got to change what you're doing. And like, that feels like it comes from a veteran, and they just feel like a group that didn't have a leader for years. And in reality, they still don't.
True. Like, I think you can get it from a good vet in the room, or I think you can get it from a good coach. Cause we heard, like, you know, back in the day with Jerry Gray, you always heard guys talking how much Jerry Gray helped them out, or even what we've heard from DeMarcus Covington, the new defensive line coach, how much the guys like him. Like, I haven't heard anything about Luke Mahaffey, I believe, who's the wide receiver coach now. And Jason Vrabel, I didn't hear much about him when he was the wide receiver coach either. And again, like I think we said on the last episode too, just about every one of these wide receivers were at their best as rookies, and they've either plateaued or declined outside of maybe Romeo Dubs, which is weird to say. So I don't know, just like to see some type of improvement, and maybe another year will make that happen.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Next thing to talk about, moving on to the big boys, Elton Jenkins will be present for minicamp. I'm not sure. Well, I guess it is minicamp now, and he is present. He isn't suited up. He's kind of having a hold-in type deal. He's in a weird spot. He's got 2 years left on his deal, and he's going to play center this year for the Packers. He's not upset with playing center. He's just kind of upset with his contract and the way it's structured, which I totally understand. It's mostly a guaranteed money type of thing, because after this year, his guaranteed money is pretty much up. And once they're done with him this year, they're probably going to replace him one way or another. You know, we've got some different interior, you know, with drafting Belton, having Monk, maybe Sean Ryan, we can move him to center, but he doesn't have that kind of security that he's had in the past. And now he's also seen Aaron Banks gets this huge deal pretty much to replace him at left guard. And if you remember when Elgton Jenkins signed this deal 4 years ago or whatever, they had language in there that would some escalators where if he played tackle for so many snaps in the season. So he's like, okay, I've got this written in here. So if I'm playing a more premier position, I'm going to be paid more handsomely. And instead, the Packers are like, you know, how about we move you to a less lucrative position, have you play center? So he didn't show up for OTAs. He's there at minicamp right now, not practicing. I kind of understand it. It seems like in the way Wilde has talked about it is that he would just like more guaranteed money just so that he can kind of guarantee his roster spot next year. So it's not a huge deal right now. I don't think it's going to balloon into anything. He also had that thing with TMZ where apparently he didn't pay his tab at a strip club. And then he tweeted out just the cap emoji saying that it was a lie. But any big thoughts here on Elgton Jenkins holding at center?
It does suck because, like, on one hand, like, dude, you signed the contract. Like, that's like kind of how it works. Like, if there's no guaranteed money in your last year of the contract, you don't get guaranteed money. But I can also understand where he's coming from. I don't know. It's a tough spot. I also don't like, are the Packers motivated to give him any guaranteed money? And to like, no, like, what's their motivation? So he plays in minicamp. I mean, does he have incentives tied to that? Like, what's the, when do the penalties start being incurred? Because I bet he suits up for that. Like, it's more of just like a statement, right? Like, I don't know.
It's still a statement that he showed up for minicamp, though. If he wasn't there, it would be a true, much bigger deal. So right now, it seems like he'll probably
play. Like a team guy, which is great.
Mm-hmm. But maybe it's just like maybe they see Monk right now and they're like, oh, man, I don't know if we can go into 2026 with this guy as our center. With
well,
him getting
that's a good play. Maybe that's his strategy. He's like, OK, I know there's nobody behind me. So you guys look at what's behind me. I'll give you an opportunity to see that. With the ones, and then, which is a good strategy from his point. I understand it.
The only time I'm going to get concerned about this situation is if we get into training camp and he still is not practicing, just because of the amount of shuffling that we've done on the offensive line with bringing in Banks, moving Tom over to right tackle, moving Elgton to center, left tackle, is it Rashid Walker? Is it Jordan Morgan? Like, there's a lot of new pieces there, and I would much rather get our starting five in and settled during training camp so that they can hit the ground running during the regular season, because we see it every single year. The teams that have all five starting linemen the entire year, or as few different combinations as possible, tend to be the most successful units.
And I guess that'll lead us right into the next topic, which is Zach Tom, who, again, this is probably a nothing type deal. He's pretty much taken all the snaps at right tackle. But a couple of weeks ago at Steno, the offensive coordinator's presser, he said that every spot on the offensive line is open for competition outside of left guard and center, meaning right tackle. Zach Tom, in a contract year, would be in a competition for his job, which is kind of funny. Zach Tom did say that he wasn't proud of the way he played last year with his torn pec. So hopefully this year he's better anyways, even though he played pretty well outside of the Eagles game or the Lions. It always seemed like those big games where he really struggled. But again, I don't know if, are we really concerned about Zach Tom here being in some type of competition? It's funny because, again, it's like, oh, he's in a, I think they're just hyping up competition all around this team now, you know, with the receiver group and everything else, defensive line edge as well. But it's like, is Anthony Belton really going to push him at right tackle? You know, is Jordan Morgan going to push him at right tackle? Jordan Morgan, apparently, I don't think he's played any snaps at right guard. So it does seem like it's going to be a competition at left tackle with Rashid Walker. But you guys give a shit about Zach Tom? I'm sure he's fine, right?
I think he's fine. I don't know. That's just, like you said, that's just like pushing competition, which is fine. But yeah, I'm not worried about it.
LaFleur would probably tell us there's a kicker competition this year, to be honest.
They did ask today. It was funny because Billy was like, do you feel better about, you know, you've had some limbo at the kicker position and at the specialist? And Matt was just like, no, we feel good. Like that, just a very, very short answer, which is like, yeah, I feel so much better too, that it was like, what, 2 or 3 years of Jesus Christ, what are we doing at kicker? Now it's like, all right, we got the McManus, the very good boy, as our kicker for at least the next 3 years.
That's probably how everyone describes it, the very good boy.
But that's my point. I'm with you, Spencer. Like, I think it's just LaFleur hyping up competition everywhere. Yes. Like, I before we started talking about it, I couldn't have even told you who Zach Tom was realistically competing with at right tackle.
Right. And I'm very curious to see what the offensive line will be in 2026, because I wouldn't be shocked if they do give him a new deal as a right tackle, and then they're like, swoop, and then they move him over to left tackle, and then have Jordan Morgan or Anthony Belton be the right tackle, figure whatever else out in the middle there, and whatever. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Bo Melton at tackle for snaps, just to see.
Who says no?
Maybe he can do it.
Even though he can't block as a wideout. Anyways. With that, you know, we're leading into training camp. I'm not quite sure when training camp starts. It's mini camp right now. I think they go on this week, but you know, we have the Andy Herman tweets in the world overhyping things. We'll always remember Kalen Hill, how Matt LaFleur has to make a role for Kalen Hill on the offense because of what Andy saw during training camp with him. And then he, of course,
he still hasn't, to be honest.
Yeah, very, very true. I don't even think he's played any type of football since getting cut from the Green Bay Packers, but training camp hero, you know, there's always training camp heroes. Remember DJ Williams back in the day? That might have been more so shorts. Again, Kalen Hill, guys who really jump out in training camp. Maybe some guys, I mean, Sam Shields, back when he was a rookie, he was a hero and he turned it into a pretty lucrative career, a very productive career for the Packers. So we're all going to have one guess for this year's training camp hero. Todd, who do you have?
Does it have to be a Packer? Is it more fun to? It has to be a Packer. Oh shit! Okay, wow, this is weird.
Does it have to be some like back of the roster guy, like Vic Saoto?
That's what I was thinking. Is it like an unsung, like
up to you guys?
See this coming?
I mean, I don't think you want to say like Tucker Kraft. You know, I don't want to think. Okay, I don't think you want to say
that's what
kind of established.
Because there's some gimmies on the list, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm going to say, I don't know, between my boy Brenton Cox. I was thinking about him, maybe. Mm. I like him a little
you
bit.
You're thinking about Cox.
Well, that's inappropriate. I don't know. I kind of think Hobbs. I'm going to go with Hobbs.
Nate Hobbs. Okay. Why do you think that?
I don't know. He's a big physical. I kind of think we see him a lot in the slot, and I think that Halfley, like with how his defense operates, I think that can be a really effective position with the right guy. And a little bit of it is just like a little like when Raiders fans were so disappointed to see Hobbs leave, that makes me feel a little good, a little warm inside. And I'm like, ooh, maybe that's like the fun piece that we've been missing. And like I think he's not super fast, right? But his size is pretty good. Is that accurate on Hobbs?
I don't. He's a very physical player, and it's funny you said the thing about the Raiders fans being upset when he left. The two things that I saw was, oh god, I really wish we kept him in. All right, he's gone. He's hurt a lot.
So, true, but if he's healthy, yes. In my head, they're all healthy.
Yeah, he's right got now, a nice beard too, so I like that he brings nice that beard to the defense.
I'm gonna go with Marshawn Lloyd. Yeah. I think he's a different type of running back in that room. I mean, Emmanuel Wilson, I really liked him last year. I thought he had a really good year, but I mean, he's a third round pick, right? And he just has to beat out two undrafted guys to be that second back. I mean, I think everybody in the building was excited to see him get back on the practice field this spring. So I remember being really excited about him coming out of USC last year. So I'm going to go with him.
I wanted
is 6'2", by the way.
Okay, that's fine.
He's a 4.48 guy. She's not slow, but not fast.
Okay. I was going to pick Marshawn Lloyd. I think he is a guy who is really flying under the radar. And I mean, he was described as a rocket ship last year by Jordan Love. I mean, even in limited snaps that he had in preseason and the regular season, He's just a completely different running back than Josh Jacobs. He's a guy with like those stupid, like, you know, those best ball leagues where you draft before the season and then it makes the best lineup that you can have every single week, like whoever scores top points. He's a guy I'm taking in like the last round, because I think when he's on, it's going to be like a fucking 70-yard touchdown out of nowhere. And maybe he's nothing, but it's still, no one really ran away with a backup job last year. So I feel like, and especially with fucking training camp, when there's not as much contact, he's going to be the guy that people are talking about as long as he can stay healthy. The guy I'm going to pick, though, I'm going to pick Jordan Morgan. I think he got a bad rap last year. You know, he's good size. He's a rascot. He loves football, allegedly, all that stuff. You know, there was all these, you know, he posted like he was working out this offseason, which is whatever. You know, he was at the facility in like January or February, still working with the team, blah, blah, blah. But he was still playing out of position at right guard. You know, it seemed like it was they were trying to get the most out of a high draft pick. He was flip-flopping with Sean Ryan. But so far, he's only been playing left tackle. So I really wonder what they're going to do here. I think Rashid Walker would probably beat him out. But I think Jordan Morgan has already left a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouth. And he's someone who no one really even thinks about. And I just don't think that's fair when he was banged up with injuries. I mean, he was neck and neck with Sean Ryan all of training camp last year. And then he got banged up right at the end of training camp, I believe. And then he had that nagging knee injury, I believe, for the majority of the or shoulder, which eventually ended him on the season ending IR. So he's the guy who I think is, I mean, it's kind of the opposite of a training camp all-star, because usually it's guys in shorts who can run fast. But I just think he's the guy, and I mean, shit, I think a couple of years ago I said Sean Ryan or Rashid Walker, one of those guys, were going to make a name, and they've been, you know, playing on the offensive line a little bit more. But I think he's the guy who has a chance to push Rashid Walker, perhaps start over him. I think he'd have to blow the doors off to actually start over Rashid, just because he's in a contract year, and I think they'd rather want to keep Jordan Morgan on the bench just because he has more of that versatility if someone goes down. But he's the guy who I think is, I mean, besides Marshawn Lloyd, that's gonna, I don't know, his name's gonna pop up a bunch during training camp.
I was gonna ask you that question, Spencer, if you could see him beating out Walker to start the year, or if you see it as a kind of a timeshare to start, because wasn't it similar? Was it Bakhtiari? He came in and a couple of games into his rookie year and just
It was Elton Jenkins rotated early on with Lane Taylor. Bakhtiari started right off the get because Brian Bulaga tore his ACL at training at either in Pittsburgh or family night. I forgot which one of the off season, or one was Jordy, one was Bulaga.
Jordy was in Pittsburgh. I remember that.
Okay. That's what it was then. But yeah. And it's an odd spot to be in, because like I said, Jordan Morgan would have to blow the doors off, because if you bench Rashid Walker, one, you're benching a guy in a contract year. He's, even if he doesn't play next year, he's probably going to get a pretty big contract, and you'd want to get a decent comp pick back for that. And I don't think you'd want to trade him either, you know? So it's just kind of a tough spot to be in, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
What do you guys think pops early as far as draft picks in training camp? Because there's always, I guess maybe let's do this, not named Matthew Golden. Who do you think like gets an opportunity early? Maybe a weird way to say it.
I kind of feel like names.
Texas. Oh, do you want to go then?
I was going to say Colin Oliver, I think, is going to get opportunities just because of his speed off the edge.
I like that.
I can see him coming into preseason games and wrecking things in the third quarter.
I think that is it Sorrell from Texas?
Yep.
There was so many people that said so many good things about him. Maybe he doesn't pop early, because I don't know that he's as like as much of it as an athletic guy. But apparently he's like super smart, super hardworking. Like everybody on the team at Texas was like, that's like the hardest working guy out here. So like that makes you feel a little bit better, like to have a guy like that. So I'm hoping by like the end of the season, and like that D end room, I mean, you guys know how I feel about that room, that it sucks. So like if there's a room that a rookie can break into, it's the D end room, like for sure. So I'm hoping, Baron Sorrell.
Yeah.
That's the dude that came in. He stuck around for day two and got his name announced. Day three. Or is that what it was? Day three? Yeah, and he got his name announced. No, it wasn't day three.
It was day three. It was day three. Pick.
Yeah, fourth round pick.
Oh, that's right.
I was second guessing that whole time too. Those are the two guys I would have named as well. I mean, Colin Oliver, you already know Andy Herman's going to be tweeting about he is unblockable in one-on-ones because he's just that pass rush specialist.
Fast.
I haven't seen anyone like this. It's like, yeah, because we haven't really drafted smaller, speedy edge rushers in the last 5 years.
I wonder if there's that tackle from Georgia, if he ends up playing a run game by the end of the year. That's not like an early. I kind of framed it as like early, but
he's a big guy. He's a guy who, if I had, this is so dumb. I mean, I said like, not exactly the same thing about Tucker Kraft, but the way he talks, I wonder how much he's already talking about how he wants a job in the media after football. And I'm like, well, are you really invested? Because you're a big guy in the trenches.
So like not AJ Dillon-esque?
Yes.
Like he's not really here for football?
Exactly. Exactly. And he is very well spoken, but I'm like, that is not a fun job where you literally just stand there and get fucking ran at all game. Like, are you really going to love this? Are you really going to stick around
that's
the league?
Okay.
Yeah, it's stupid. But I have nothing to go off of right now. But yeah, Colin Oliver and then Sorrell too. I think those kind of edge guys, it's tougher to make an impact early. But again, he seems like a guy who should have gone earlier in the draft anyways. And I'm excited to see what he turns into. I don't know. Usually defense, it's a little tougher unless, like you mentioned, Billy, like Vic Soto back in the day. Like, you don't really show up. Like, I remember Jeremy Thompson, his name popping up that year too, when Clay Matthews was a rookie. But defense, it's a little bit tougher to make a name. But
I ask a way off-topic question? You know how they had, I'm asking anyway, do you know how they had the guys from, like, wasn't our guy from, like, a country in Africa that came here? And he's just, like, on the team. He doesn't cost a spot.
Yes.
Whatever happens with those guys?
Well, we talked about it last year because we cut him. God,
we cut him? He was free?
So he's a roster exemption type. I think you get 1 year with him, and then we cut him during training camp because we signed Alex Hale, who is now our backup kicker, but he's a free roster spot because he's from like Ireland or something technically.
So Australia, either way.
Whatever.
Same thing. They're basically the same.
Not Africa like most of the guys with that program. But Goody basically hacked the system to not have to use a practice squad spot. He's just using it for the backup kicker. So that's why I know his name too. But yeah, I think he actually signed with the Seahawks. I could be wrong as their international player type deal, but now it's our kicker.
They call it international player. That's what it's called. And that's an exemption spot.
It's something like that. Yeah.
So they're from Canada.
Yes. I think that works too.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Which we have a quarterback from Canada on the roster.
That's right. What's his name?
Tyler Elgersma.
Ugh,
that sounds Canadian.
Elgersma.
It actually doesn't sound Canadian. I don't know what it sounds like.
God, I almost said I had the name there too of one of the backup quarterbacks we had in recent memory as well. God, Danny Etling. Was that last year? Was it a couple years ago? A
couple years ago.
Okay. With that, we don't have anything else. We're a little light on content this week. You know, I mean, there's not a ton to talk about. But one other thing I wanted to bring up. You know, again, I hate the internet. As time goes on, I hate the internet more and more. It turns into, it's not so much information. It's more so what gets clicks, what gets people upset, what hot take can you put out every day? You know, like Zach Jacobson, Peter Bukowski, and Ross Uglum, who can never admit when he's wrong. Earlier this week, Arian Foster, the former Texans running back, threw out the first pitch for the Brewers. He has recently became a Brewers super fan. And while he was tailgating, he had his first spotted cow. He was looking forward to having his first spotted cow. He had heard so much about it. I think he's been in the Chicago area, whatever, recently. So he just posted a picture of him holding a spotted cow. And Ross Uglum quote tweets it and says, "There are several better beers in Wisconsin, ..., asterisk." So opening up the floor, what do we think of this comment?
What does that mean?
Like he said it knowing that he was going to get pushback from Packer fans, like ducks, like you're, they're going to start attacking me for saying this.
Like dodgeball, dodge, dip, duck,
yeah,
dive, and dodge.
Okay, that kind of duck. I was thinking quack, quack.
Mm.
Okay. What you asked what we think about Spotted Cow?
Pretty much, overall, yes.
It's not overrated. It's a good beer. Are you saying it's the... If you were like, this is the best beer in the world, well, obviously, everyone has different tastes, but it's a good beer. I don't think it's overrated.
Agreed. And part of the appeal is you can only get it in Wisconsin, so... As a Minnesota resident, when I go to Wisconsin, I will buy usually a couple of cases, not necessarily a Spotted Cow, but it's in the rotation along with Moon Man and Fat Squirrel, Staghorn. I usually go through a couple of different types depending on time of year from New Glarus versus Leinenkugel's, not really in the rotation. So...
If you're hating on Spotted Cow, I'm going to say this quick before Spencer gets his hate in. If you're hating on Spotted Cow, like what are you doing? You're just doing it to like get interactions.
Yep.
That's all it's for.
That's exactly
it's a good beer.
There isn't a far and away best beer. There isn't a far and away best burger. Like it's people can have what they. But still it's like it's Culver's, it's Five Guys, it's In-N-Out for the most part. Like those are the big three in my eyes, don't you think?
Yeah, and Five Guys doesn't count because it doesn't have a drive-thru. So if there's two of them. We've got fast food.
And you can't get In-N-Out over here, so I don't even Culver's. Have it in my top three.
True. But either it's just it's like I need to post this to be an asshole. I need to be a contrarian for no good reason. It's just like, dude, everyone knows it's a really good beer. Like, just agree, it's a really good beer, and a lot of people probably have it as their favorite beer. Like,
did you say how Arian reacted to it? Did he like it? Did he? I don't even know if he likes beer.
I didn't look. I didn't see if Arian replied to him. I don't know what he thought of it, but it's a pretty. It's like a Spotted Cow.
Solid.
It's very solid because it's not too much taste. It's enough to be a little bit different, but it's not like a domestic or anything like that. And you could slug a lot of them in a night if you needed to.
I was going to say it's refreshing when you're tailgating at a Brewers game and it's about 85 degrees out and the sun's beating down on you.
And it's enough to, like you said, Spencer, it doesn't have like enough, like it appeals to the masses. It's not like, it's probably not everyone's favorite beer. But I would venture to say most people that like beer that have a Spotted Cow, like this is a really good beer. Like this is a solid beer. And that's what you do if you're selling beer. You want to sell beer to a lot of people, right? Like that's the goal.
And I didn't think this would, or I would get into this, but it's funny because Todd, I got married a week ago or whatever. And
you did.
You almost were going to get a keg of Spotted Cow or attempt to get one. But then because my wedding was in Minnesota, we didn't even attempt it because we were like legally. And we've seen stories of like bars and shit moving it across state lines and they've gotten like arrested or fined for it. And it was a private event, obviously, but it was like there was enough of a gray area where we were like, well, let's not even risk it by getting a keg of it into Minnesota.
So I was tipped off to the fact that it's illegal to sell it in Minnesota. I'm like, well, what if we don't sell it?
Right.
What if we give it away? But then I looked a little bit deeper and it came up as like almost like a tax or a distribution law. And I was like, oh, well, you could for sure get in trouble for that. Like if you're it feels way too messy. Like nothing would have happened. It would have been completely fine. But at the same time, it just felt... It felt wrong, and they don't need it. Like in Minnesota, they don't need to be blessed in Minnesota with Spotted Cow. Like they can go get it. You know,
I'm just imagining like the cops are running down the hill at the wedding venue.
They're like,
we got a tip, and they're like tapping the keg, and like, come on, give me a slurp of that. Yep, you're coming with me, boys. Getting locked up for the Spotted Cow. It is one of my because I feel like as time goes on, there's less of the like little homey or small time. Type things that you know are prevalent in society today, and it's funny that like that old woman who owns New Glarus is like, we're never just Wisconsin.
We'll never sell it anywhere else.
She's gonna fucking die. Like they would make so much more money, you know, even if it was just a Midwest thing, like McGolden is. But she's like, nope, just Wisconsin. We're just keeping it here. And if you bring it across state lines, we're gonna sue you.
which is hilarious because like it is really good, but it's a good point of like they could sell it everywhere and they would make buckets of money.
They could sell to Molson Coors or InBev or whoever and just absolutely blow that place up. It'd be huge.
It's fun that like our beer, like our most famous beer is probably Spotted Cow, right? I guess other than, well, Miller.
Yeah, it depends on how you want to look at it.
I guess like our famous like crafty beer has a cow on it. Like that's kind of like a fun.
My cousin was telling me this story. There's a brewery outside of like O'Galley, Wisconsin or something. Middle of bumfuck nowhere. Okay. They several years ago brewed a beer called Speckled Calf. And New Glarus Brewing came after them for a copyright infringement and basically gave them a cease and desist, or we're going to sue the hell out of you and shut you down. So they changed it to the acronym for the beer formerly known as Speckled Calf.
It's just an acronym.
It's like six letters long. And so all these people come in and they're like, what does that even stand for? And then they tell them the story.
Those cashiers or whatever, they're going to be like, well,
that's actually a great spin zone though, because that's a great story. Like to you spin it and then people are like, what does that mean? And then you get to tell that great story.
Right. And everybody in Wisconsin is going to know what that means. And it's like, well, let me tell you, 6 years ago, we almost got shut down by New Glarus or whenever it was.
Well, it's like, there's probably a better way to do it. I don't know how you can do it in that case with a brewery and a more small town type beer like that. But was it Fulton's or the other brewery downtown in Minneapolis here where they had a beer called Dilly Dilly? Remember this?
Oh, like Philly Philly?
No, there was
Dilly Bar Dan?
No, wasn't it Dilly Dilly? There was the whole Bud Light Dilly Dilly. Remember?
Oh,
it was
like
the Renaissance people.
It was an old Super Bowl commercial.
If you saw the commercial, you'd remember it. But it was a big thing. People were saying Dilly Dilly and like cheers in their Bud Lights. And this brewery had a beer called Dilly Dilly, and Bud Light sent a like a messenger with like a tall scroll all dressed up in Renaissance shit. And they like told them they could no longer sell the beer in that way. And that's how they gave them like the cease and desist or whatever.
Oh, I feel like I remember that.
I would love to see that because you have some dude showing up in like a night costume and reading off a cease and desist in an old timey English accent. It's like, sure, guy, very funny. Yeah. Yep, that great job, great costume here. Let me buy you beer. Oh, you're actually serious. You have a lawyer out back in a suit and tie. Okay,
I don't remember if they actually had them stop selling it, but they might have done like a similar thing where they slightly changed the name of it. But either way, it was, you know, a great way to get PR for both breweries. With that. Off season, I don't know when we'll have another podcast here. You know, it's getting pretty fucking warm. It keeps being in the 80s now. It actually feels like summer, so you know football is coming. I'm glad that now we're starting to get beyond the bullshit of like the stupid rumor shit that seems to go on all the time during right after the draft up until the start of training camp. So I'm glad we're finally getting players in shorts and jerseys. But do you guys have anything else?
No, now we just have to hear about Elton, which is like the most boring of the drama.
I don't think it's going to be anything.
There has to be drama. They have to make drama to talk about, right? So there's got to be something.
I'm glad the Jair thing's done. It will never get as close to the Jair shit that was going on. I'm very curious to see, one, who Jair signs with, two, for how much, three, what he says about Green Bay when he's asked about it from, you know, the media with whatever team he's at.
And how many games he plays.
That too. It feels similar to, and I don't want to put this on Jair, but it feels similar to when we moved on from Za'Darius Smith, who I hated Za'Darius. I love Jair, but it's one of those things where whoever signs Jair is going to get a pretty good deal on a pretty good player. Right. And that's what Za'Darius was for the Vikings that first year or two.
What do you think someone signs him for though? Or is it just like all incentive based on games played? That's what I would do if I'm a GM, right? Like,
right. Obviously, but I don't know if he'd agree with that Josina Anderson, I think, was reporting that like six teams have interest in him. But at the same time, it's like, it's late in the off season. Obviously he's had injury concerns. I, because he might be going for maybe less money but more guaranteed rather than something that's incentive based.
Sure.
So we'll just,
I mean, you look at the other corners on the market, there's not a ton of names that really move the needle.
Stephon Gilmore and Rasul Douglas.
Well, case in point is Hobbs got a huge contract from us, so that shows you what the market looks like.
Well, you don't know how good he is, you know.
And Zedarius, he gets hurt all the time, too.
Well, Zedarius, he got a big contract. We had no idea who the hell he was. Most of the league didn't. He was pretty good those first 2 years. But, yeah, either way, you're not wrong. They paid. This is what Justice Mosqueda has been saying, and he said the same thing about Keyshawn Nixon. When we signed him, everyone was like, this is a lot of money for a kick returner. He's like, nope, that is a slot corner. That is a slot corner contract. And with Hobbs, there's a little bit more than a slot corner contract. So maybe he's going to be an outside guy. But either way, we shall see. Anything else besides anything else?
Dilly dilly.
Unrelated to anything we've talked about, And I'm kind of surprised you haven't mentioned it. What day is Mark Murphy's last day? Is it June 30th?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's whenever the owner's meeting is. I think it's July 25th. I could be wrong, okay. And I'm definitely not counting the days.
That's right. Yep. It is the end of July there.
I was going to add that in here too. Do you see he talked at that golf event like last week about Dreher?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, he's like, yeah, well, he was a good player, but you know, he was hurt too much. It's like, you don't have to say that. Just
right.
See, you don't have to say anything about actual football. You are just a fucking statue. Say, Dreher, you know, he was a great draft pick for us. Love the time that he had for us. He was a great player. You know, wish it could have worked out differently, but we wish him all the luck moving on. Like, you don't have to mention anything negative, right. You fucking dillbag.
Oh, training camp starts Wednesday, the 23rd of July.
Okay. Yeah, that makes... So maybe it's the 23rd. They usually have the owners meeting. I know when Rodgers came back, they like announced it or whatever during the shareholders meeting. But I think that's the last day that Mark Murphy is president. Then they'll...
And family night is August 2nd. Which is a Saturday.
Okay. I won't be going. With that, anything else? Anything else? Anything else?
Nope. Nope.
Very good. With that, I am going to have to, by next episode, I'll have a new intro. Dreher still, you heard it about an hour ago. So Dreher will be gone. But I think I'm going to keep AJ Dillon because I don't think it's guaranteed that he makes it the 53-man roster for the Eagles, so then he can just live in infamy with us. But AJ Dillon, take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch. Anywhere I quit my job, yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month, then they took my money.
Was that a Saturday? Oh, yeah. You guys were poor, so you had Saturday morning cartoons.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's true, but okay.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. I grew up in Iowa in the 90s, okay? That's like living in the 60s. There was no cable TV.
You had PBS.
I had PBS.
Yes, and Saturday, one Saturday morning.
I had CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, and PBS, and that was about it.
What was Saturday? Was it recess? Was that Saturday morning?
NBC was one Saturday morning, I believe.
I just remember the shows. I know it was Pepper Ann.
Recess was a classic.
Recess was the headliner. You had Recess. Yep. You had Doug. No.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.